Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Illinois Specialty Crops and Agritourism Conference in Springfield, Illinois, I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report for the 6th day of January, 2016. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Ginder. He's at FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. We'll check in with Stephen Linneber at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana on the cash grain market. Discuss the weather forecast, of course, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And talk with a farmer from Park County, Indiana, that produces truck crops and how he uses social media. Stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. These are closes and not settlement prices. Nearby March corn at 353 and a quarter, up a quarter. May futures unchanged at 358 and a half, and July at 364 and a half, down a quarter. September at 370 and a quarter, up a quarter of a cent. And next year's December corn at $3.78 and a quarter, and these are now settlement prices, up a half of a cent for the day. Soy complex, January beans up 8 cents at $8.75 and three quarters. The March at $8.64 and three quarters, up 7 and a half. In May, $8.67 and a half, 5 and three quarters higher. July at $8.74 and a half, up 5 and a quarter. Next year's November at $8.78 and three quarters, 3 and three quarters of a cent higher. Bean meal up $1.60 at $2.66.90, and the bean oil 4 cents lower at $29.59. Soft red winter wheat, the nearby March contract at $4.62 and three quarters, up a penny and a half. The May at $4.68 and a quarter, up 1 and a half as well. And July at $4.75 and three quarters, up 1 and one half cents. Hard red March contract at $4.61, up 1. July at $4.80 and a half, a penny and a half higher. Live cattle futures nearby February at $136.47 and a half on their last trade, down 30 cents. April down 17 and a half at $137.17 and a half. And feeder cattle in the January 25 cents higher at $168.02 and a half. The March at $164.87 and a half, down 17 and a half cents. February lean hogs 22 and a half lower at $60.87 and a half for 100 pounds. And April lean hogs $65.92 and a half, down 15 cents. You're, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. We're coming to you from Springfield, Illinois at the Specialty Crops Conference.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil trading down $1.91 at $34.06 a barrel. Ethanol futures are 4.5 cents lower at $1.31. Gasoline on the RBOB, or the wholesale price, down 9.5 cents at $1.16 even. And heating oil or diesel fuel is $1.08 and 2.5 cents. That's down 4 and 3 tenths of a cent. Natural gas for the day at $2.27, down 5 and a half cents. Dow Jones Industrial Average 264 points lower at 16,818, and the U.S. dollar at 99.345. That's down 0.151. Gold futures for the day at $1,094, or up $15.50. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Mostly cloudy, a low of 30 degrees, a high of 42, by the way, and partly sunny skies this afternoon. This evening, a 20% chance of rain. Tomorrow, a 20% chance of rain. That'll come after 1 in the evening. Cloudy, a high of 42 degrees. Southeast winds at 7 to 11. And Thursday, occasional rain in the evening. Low of 37 degrees. Southeast winds at 9 to 11. Gusting to 15 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall set for Thursday night at 80%. Friday, occasional rain, mainly before 7 a.m. A high of 46 degrees. Southeast winds at 9 to 16. They'll turn to the south-southwest in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 22. Chance of precipitation set for 80% on Friday. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the sixth day of January. Greg Ginder is here to take a look at the marketplace. Thanks, Greg, from FC Stone in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield, Missouri, for joining us again. Tell me about the market for the day. It looks like we had a second pretty decent day in the soybean market.
Yeah, we just got a little bit of a pop here in, say, the last 5 or 10 minutes. We were trading about 4 or 5 higher. We've actually moved up into a new high for the day at 868 March. That was up a little over a dime. So yeah, it's a good trading day today.
Do you know why we've had 2 days worth of pop in the marketplace, just too low for the soybeans to begin with and decided to move up?
Oh, it appears that is probably the case more than anything. I mean, we've been running at a very oversold state on many of the grains here so far. So, you know, a 5 to 10 cent 10 cent rally is probably not out of the realm of business as usual.
Yeah, so business as usual. So producers should not take this as an indication that there is some more strength left in the marketplace to push it very much higher?
Well, it is, you know, these beans have been range bound here pretty good in the range of about $8.50 to $9. So, you know, it is we are definitely on our lows here currently, or at least over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, we're hoping to see a little bit of a rise here coming out of these holidays. And so far, we've seen a little bit here today. So we'll take every little bit we can get.
The weather forecast for Brazil looks a little better. We're in the heart of their growing season. Many have thought that there was as much as 10% damage done to parts of Goiás and Mato Grosso. Is there indications that will be supportive of the market still, or has it been built in?
Well, you're right. The current forecast is a little bit friendlier for their growing season. They were hot and dry in the north and mild and wet in the lower parts, but it seems that forecast or the new forecast has kind of offered some rain to the north and some drier, warmer weather for the south. So it is conducive to a little bit better growing conditions right there right now. Even the most bullish estimates have the production probably around a 97, and the USDA is using 100. So calling it 99 or 100 is probably still in line with the trade estimates.
Still a very large crop coming out of South America.
Sure is.
Your indications for next week from the USDA, as they'll release the final crop production figures from the United States, are those expected to change?
I'm not expecting any real big changes. There could be some potential in the corn complex, more like maybe you know, an adjustment in feed. I think from what I've been hearing, it could be 25 to 50 higher. So I mean, there's a little bit more of an opportunity there to have a little bit of usage. The export program though on corn is lagging behind a little bit, maybe 10-15% behind what we would like to see. So here going forward, we'll be keeping an eye on that. But it wouldn't be out of line to believe that potentially you could see a raise in feed and a lowered export number.
Those, of course, would be the World Agricultural Supply-Demand estimates. They'll be due to be released on Tuesday, the 12th day of January, at 11 o'clock Central Time. You can always find them on our website at willag.org right as they're released, or follow me on Twitter. My handle is @CommodityWeek. Either case, my Twitter feed will be posted right into the website at willag.org. So as soon as I can get to them at 11 o'clock next Tuesday, you will have them in front of you as well. The trade union generally has those put into the marketplace fairly quickly, and unless something really, Greg Ginder, changes, I suspect the fundamentals will not have much of an impact on the marketplace on Tuesday of next week. I guess that's where you're at today, too.
Right, and that would I don't expect any great shockers for the market here going forward for the next week or two, but we'll keep our eyes out on that South American weather and on the export program.
Farmers have been slow to market both corn and soybeans. Are your expectations that will change in the next month and a half?
We saw a pretty good wave of selling there, where we got corn up around 380 and beans in the $9 neighborhood. But since then, it appears that the prices have not been very conducive for another wave of selling. I would say if we could get back to those levels, we would probably see the farmers moving some more grain out of the country.
And do you suppose that will happen?
Yeah, I do. I'm looking forward to a little bit of a pop in the market. Like I said, it is certainly a range bound market, and as hard as they have sold these grain markets, for any little bullish tidbit that they might have to deal with, for them to unwind those positions, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see 20 cents or more on corn and 30 to 40 on beans.
So you're looking for something in the 375 for corn and beans up again to the 9 or 915 level?
It might be a little optimistic, but I never rule it out. Whenever I find these range-bound markets, I tend to believe that, the technicals have a tendency to find their way to both sides of it in fairly short order. So, yeah, I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
Have you been talking to customers about next year's crop at all yet?
Briefly, just more of a risk management standpoint. Profitability, they're looking at a December 16 new crop future at right around 380-ish. And given everything that's been going on here over the last year, some conservatives would basically look at that as an opportunity to lock in some sort of profit margin on production for next year. I wouldn't get terribly overwhelmed with it. Maybe 5% of production. But it definitely doesn't hurt to start looking at some of those opportunities out in the forward curve.
What are the outside fundamentals that you've been watching, whether that be the crude oil or the dollar?
Well, I mean, the dollar is the big one. Because it's basically been leaning on all the commodities in general. With the outside money more looking at equities and treasuries and things like that, the dollar and the stock market have a lot to do with what kind of trend we can look for. Right now, you got the dollar hovering around 100, which we haven't seen that for very long, and it could potentially go up above 100. So, with that being said, there's going to be an overwhelming overhead pressure on a lot of these commodities until we get some fundamentals that would drive them to a higher place. The crude oil is down $2 a day. The Department of Energy came out with their numbers, and they were mixed with the with gasoline and distillates at a higher inventory, but some crude oil stocks were lowered on inventory. So it looks like it is still a bearish market for crude oil and energies in general.
Greg, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Greg Ginder, of course, is with FC Stone. He's out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the Specialty Crops Conference in Springfield, Illinois today. Ken Steffen from Steffen Farms out of Tangier, Indiana now joins us. He was in earlier today on a social media conference learning a little bit about how to use that. But first, Ken, I'd like to have you tell us just a bit about your farm in Tangier and what you do.
Okay, we actually represent two farms. Pearson's Melon Farm, which is sort of four generations of customers for for melons, and then Quiet Springs Farm, where we grow a wide range of things, and we market together. Actually, it was a farm of marriage. My wife had one farm, I had another farm, and so we kind of have them together. But we grow our big five, our watermelon, cantaloupe, tomatoes, sweet corn, and pumpkins. And then we grow a number of other crops, cabbage, cucumber, zucchini, green beans, so forth.
So you're a truck crop grower,
right?
Right. And where do you market to?
We have a market at the farm in Park County, northwest corner of Park County, Indiana, and then we have another one just south of Danville in Tilton, Illinois. And, you know, we've been marketing there for 17 years, I think. And sure.
So I suppose you have a fairly loyal clientele base?
Yeah. Pearson's Melon Farm, my wife's family's farm, we see four generations of customers coming through the market. So yeah, it's been, but we're fairly well known in that area.
And you said that you and your wife both came from farms that do this.
Right.
How did those farms get involved in truck crops as opposed to grains?
Okay. Well, this area of Park County, Indiana, traditionally there was a sand dune on the east bank of the Wabash River. It's a rather extensive sandy area, and a generation ago there were 17 families raising melons there. That's what they figured out what that ground was good for, watermelons and then later cantaloupe. So we're the only ones left, and we're just a small little melon growing area, and the bigger melon growing area is south of us near Vincennes, Indiana. So we were kind of a little, you know, outlier.
Have you been using social media to try to create more buzz, a better clientele, a larger clientele?
We have, and we've had some stops and starts. My son-in-law created a website for us, a beautiful website, and it had lots of, bells and whistles and stuff, and we used some of that. We were blogging, and we were doing Twitter and stuff like that, but it was written in C, and so anytime we needed to make a change, we had to go through him. So we kind of let that language, and we just got into Facebook this past season, and we were doing some head scratching about a lot of things. You know, it's a little overwhelming, all the different connections and different outlets and what they're good for. So we're trying to figure that out right now.
What have you learned, not today, but from the previous experience with Facebook that seems to work, or things that don't work?
Well, the thing that I would like to do, and I think people want, and we probably haven't done enough of it, is we show the crops, you know, of course, but we really want to show people, the workers. We put some of that on the guys, high school kids, we get in to harvest watermelons, you know, sitting there eating watermelon, you know. So I think people want a connection with, you know, the farm and where their food's coming from. I mean, there's a connection, you know, like four generations been buying melons from Pearson's Melon Farm for a while, but you know, that kind of needs to be renewed. They kind of need to know what's going on. That's what I feel, and that's what I feel we would like to accomplish with our media, is to give people a little more of a connection what goes on day to day to get these watermelons and cantaloupes and sweet corn and tomatoes to them.
So for you, it really is about being social, but in a way that folks that are buying your products can't do today because they don't have somebody on the farm that gardens.
That's one of the things that I feel really it's important for us to educate people about what's going on, because the landscape's changing, the farm landscape is changing dramatically, and I think it's important that people be aware of what's going on down on the farm, not just the biology of it, but the economics of it too, you know. And it's not just farming, it's just the economics of small communities. And so we'd like to be able to do some education on that, but we also, I think people, you know, we want more of a connection. I mean, I see people at the market, you know, on a regular, you know, I get over there every day during the season for a while I'm unloading, but there's a lot of my customers, I don't know as much about them as I'd like, and I like more connection. And I have a feeling they probably feel the same way about us. They'd like to know more about what our day is like, you know.
Anything you took away today that you think you can deploy right away?
There's a lot of things floating around on there. Yeah, Well, I'm actually hoping this will help us coalesce and focus our strategy a little bit better. I mean, we're right in that stage. You know, we've got our feet wet. We've done websites. We've done blogging. We've done a little Twitter. We've done some Facebook. And we're just trying to figure out a coordinated strategy that's not confusing to us and to the customers. You know, that it's kind of – and I'm still learning what vehicles there are to facilitate that.
Ken, thank you so much for taking the time with us. If people want to find you online, how did they do that?
Oh, well, I would go to Facebook, and I'd go to Pearson's Melon Farm. We have a website for Stephan Farms, but it's been inactive. One of the no-nos I've been aware of. But I would go to – our biggest market is Pearson's Melon Farm in Tilton, Indiana, and we have a Facebook page there. And it's a little inactive now, but we're still doing a little bit on it. You know, wintertime, there's not so much going on. But one of the things I realize is that people like to see what's going on the farm this time of year. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we're not doing all of it. It's just happening.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Ken Stephan, of course, is with Stephan Farms. He's out of Tangier, Indiana. Let's check now the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is here. He's from the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. That's their ethanol plant. Stephen, thanks for being with us this afternoon. How's basis been acting over the holidays and then this beginning of the new year in your area?
Due to corn movement there before 2016, obviously basis stayed relatively flat to weaker as we watched a little more bushels move at us on that time frame. Now, as we get to the first of the year and guys have repositioned the balance sheet, now we're being a little more stingy with probably corn movement than we expected to see in December. Therefore, basis getting a little stronger here on the front end to see some January corn movement.
You had been at overs. Do you remain there for corn?
Yes, very much so. You know, middle 20s is kind of where we've hung the whole way through. High teens to low 20s seems to be the number we've seen since post-harvest.
And for the soy complex, what are folks paying in your area in terms of basis levels, relatively speaking, at this time?
Little flatter on beans in terms of value. I mean, we're option priced to 10 over probably. Really, really slow demand on the bean side. I mean, the crusher is not asking for beans today because they're looking at an end product that they're struggling to move out their door. So we're looking at corn at a little more of an opportunistic move today than we would be beans.
So why is it the crushers are having a problem? Is it margins or something else happening?
I think you can, I mean, not working directly with a crusher would say that margins would definitely take part into it, and I think it's the fact that we're, you know, having to just minimize crush due to the fact that we're got an excessive amount of end product there that needs to find a home, and that demand is just very porous today.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Stephen. I appreciate you being with us. That, of course, is Stephen Linneber. He is with the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you today from Springfield, Illinois, and the Illinois Specialty Crops Conference. More on the weather in 2 minutes.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's National Frozen Yogurt Day. It's also St. Dorothy's Day, patron of brewers, gardeners, and florists. On this day in agricultural history in 1617, Prospero Alpini died. An Italian physician and botanist, he is said to have introduced coffee and bananas to Europe and was among the first to artificially fertilize date palms. In 1685, Charles II, King of England, died. Known as the Merry Monarch, he introduced tea to England during his reign. And on December 23rd of 1675, he issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he had to revoke it a year later. In 1796, John Stevens Henslow was born. A British clergyman and botanist, he was a mentor of Charles Darwin. To help get farmers to apply scientific methods, he gave lectures on the fermentation of manure. He also showed Irish farmers how to extract starch from rotten potatoes during the potato famine of 1845. And in 1898, Rudolf Carl Georg Friedrich Leuchart died, a German zoologist and pioneer in the modern study of parasites. He was among the first to trace the life history of tapeworms and the liver fluke. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason here at the Specialty Crops Conference in Springfield at the Crown Plaza on this Wednesday afternoon. On the line with us now is Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Let's start here at home. Upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers have been at flood stage. They are a vital line to the export facilities in New Orleans. Are things going to recede along those rivers to a point where we can begin moving grain again soon?
I do think that that is going to be the case, at least for the Illinois and the middle Mississippi, fairly soon. But the crest is working its way through the lower parts of the Mississippi Basin, and there's going to be some notable flooding that occurs still in parts of the Delta as we move forward through the next week to 10 days. And because of that, I think there will still be some disruption to some of the shipments that take place on the river until that crest works all the way down towards New Orleans. But conditions will definitely improve. We're not looking at any major precipitation events for the Midwest for a while. We do have a storm that will impact our region coming up here over the next several days that will produce light amounts of rain and snow, but shouldn't create a new crest.
Move a little further to the west. And do we have any worries about the hard red winter wheat crop and snow cover?
There is a little bit of concern. The state of Kansas in particular has been snow-free for a little while. We got down to some single-digit temperatures late last week and early in the holiday weekend, and that raised some concern about the condition of wheat there. We have a much colder air mass now on the forecast charts for this coming weekend and on into the early part of next week, and it's going to be imperative that we get the snow on the ground in the central plains wheat country, and it looks like it will happen. I think we'll see a little bit of precipitation starting up here tonight. We'll see an increase tomorrow into Friday, and I think we'll have good coverage to protect that crop from any kind of potential winter kill.
And finally, turn your attention to South America. Mato Grosso has been suffering to some extent pretty hard through this growing season. Will there be enough rainfall to alleviate problems there?
We are there at the peak of the crisis, and conditions have already started actually to improve in some areas in Goiás and parts of Mato Grosso as well. The northern and east central parts of Mato Grosso have been the driest and most seriously impacted here this season so far, and those areas still have not yet seen a large amount of rain. But as we go forward now through this next week to 10 days, we will certainly see rain in those areas. The crops will be improved quite a bit. Some of the production that was production potential that was lost is not going to be regained, but there is still a large part of the state that could still see a return to fairly good yield potentials.
Is your expectation that yields across the whole of South America will be pretty decent for the year then still?
I do think that's the case. I think 10% of the Brazilian crop is probably going to be down on yield, but the rest of the country is probably going to do very well. And Argentina is poised to have very good yields nationwide.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.